Good morning. It's 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, September 28th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. A regional panel says Stikine River subsistence sockeye harvest should no longer be limited. The Southeast Alaska Regional Advisory Council voted Wednesday to remove the fishery's 600 sockeye guideline harvest level. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Sitka.
The Stikine subsistence fishery began 8 years ago, when fewer than 250 fish were caught. Last year, the harvest rose to the highest level ever, just under 1,700. Advisory Council Coordinator Robert Larson says more than tripling the old harvest level makes sense.
The stocks in the Stikine River are generally healthy. We're looking at an average return of 185,000 fish, 184,000. And our harvest, you know, if we caught 2,000 fish, it would, you know, a little more than 1% of that.
Larson says individual catch limits would remain at 40 sockeye per year, and he thinks the permit numbers have peaked, which means the total will not exceed 2,000 fish. But Councilmember Harvey Kitka of Sitka wondered if more growth should be expected.
I'd like to know whether there is any more families that will get involved in this fishery. And if so, then the numbers will change. And just how much they'll change, we have no idea.
Larson says the overall subsistence harvest could grow as more people fish the river, but not by very much. The Stikine flows from British Columbia to the Inside Passage between Wrangell and Petersburg. The Council's recommendation now goes to the Federal Subsistence Board, which oversees customary and traditional harvests in the state. If it's approved, it still must make it through the Pacific Salmon Commission, which sets overall harvest levels for rivers crossing U.S.-Canada boundaries. Most Stikine sockeye swim into British Columbia. State Fish and Game Department Deputy Commissioner David Bedford represents Alaska on the Salmon Commission. He says the current fishery underwent a lot of scrutiny before it was approved.
It was something that we continued to pursue over about a two-year period to ultimately get that authorized. But again, I'm bearing in mind that what that shows is that Canada is paying some pretty close attention to this. And then I'd hearken back again to the notion that with the transboundary rivers, you're talking about domestic Canadian production.
He says changing the Stikine subsistence harvest would reopen the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Other more controversial issues could be raised and delay the process. The proposal does not affect Chinook and Coho subsistence fisheries on the Stikine. The Southeast Advisory Council debated whether to ask for a specific number of sockeye. Council member Frank Wright Jr. of Hoonah says a request without a limit would be harder to push through.
I really think that, you know, eventually there are going to be more harvesters because, you know, the sockeye, for some reason, is always, you know, the most sought-after fish. Concern to me is if we didn't have any kind of number, it would be, what would we be going after?
The council ultimately voted to just ask to eliminate the current harvest level. Officials say the commission is most interested in the river's overall catch, not how it's divvied up. Still, a significantly higher subsistence catch could affect commercial fishermen operating in ocean waters. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from the Regional Advisory Council meeting in Sitka.
The Alaska Marine Highway had a good year in 2011, with ridership up throughout the system. Ferry Chief Mike Newsell gave an update Wednesday during the Southeast Conference meeting in Craig.
In terms of passenger and vehicle volume, 2011 was a pretty up year for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We carried an all-time record number of vehicles in calendar year 2011, ever for the Marine Highway System in 50 years. Our passenger count was up a couple percent. And then in Southeast Alaska, if you just look at Southeast only, not Southwest and South Central, those numbers are up too, but not quite as significantly.
Operating expenses for 2012 are $170 million, and ticket revenue came in about $52 million. Newsell says that's also a record.
And I'll point out that that record revenue generation was achieved without a fare increase. We haven't had a fare increase in the Marine Highway System in like 4 years. So that increase in revenue is due to an increase in ridership.
Newsel says the summer 2013 schedule will go online soon for reservations, and there have been some changes. He says the Malaspina will home port all week in Juneau rather than some days in Skagway, and the Leconte will overnight in Hoonah, Angoon, and Pelican. Some upcoming projects include a rebuilt terminal and a dock at Prince Rupert's, British Columbia. Newsel says the ferry system first has to renegotiate its lease for that dock. Construction at the Annette Bay terminal should be done in time to start service this fall. That terminal will cut travel time between Metlakatla and Ketchikan in half. The Alaska Marine Highway System will turn 50 years old next year. The Southeast Conference formed in 1958 to advocate for the establishment of the state ferry system. The group meets annually, each year in a different Southeast community. The three-day Craig Conference began Tuesday. The Adzers have finished the final beams meant for the ongoing construction of Wrangell's Chief Shakes Tribal House. KSTK's Ariel Van Cleve recently visited the carving shed and filed this report.
You can hear the sound of a blade meeting wood coming from a large shed in downtown Wrangell. Two women are busy working on long rectangular beams of red cedar with adzes, which is an axe-like tool that's shaped a bit like a curved L. Susie Kaysinger and Linda Churchill have been adzing since last year for the ongoing construction of Chief Shakes Tribal House. The two are finishing work on the final beams, which will be used to form the fire pit.
This is going to look nice, though. I really like the boards that have the knots about, because it gives it so much more character.
The carving shed itself is about the length of a barge container and as wide as about two. The floor is covered in pieces of wood, and the whole area is coated with a rich, sweet smell. Kaysinger says she has the scent of cedar on her clothes and skin after she's put in her eight-hour workday. She explains adzing is a slow process of taking small notches out of the beams while following the grain of the wood.
The rows are supposed to be between a quarter and a half inch wide, and you try to just follow the row down and just keep your lines. That's a really big challenge, is to try to keep the line straight. It's getting a lot easier now, but now that we're almost done.
It's physically straining work, and both note the muscles in their forearms have gotten bigger, and they say their hands have grown stiffer since they began about a year ago. The women kneel on the boards or stand on top or beside them with their hand tools. Because of the shape of the adze, the two actually swing the blade toward their bodies to make their notches. Churchill points out it can get a little dangerous.
Last year I jumped over a timber and threw my knee right into the adze, and it scared the heck out of me. Cut right through my pants, just whoosh, cut my kneecap right smack, man. I was lucky it didn't hurt too, or it didn't cause any permanent damage. I didn't tell anyone. I just ran to the bathroom. I was so scared. I shocked myself.
She says her father was a carver, and she's glad to be following in the family tradition. Kaysinger's interest in carving first started when she was a teenager and took a class with Wrangell's Johnson O'Malley program. It's historic that Kaysinger and Churchill are taking part in the effort because typically women have not been allowed to do this kind of work. Churchill says the Tlingit men did not allow women to touch carving tools because women were perceived to have too much power, which could be transferred into the tools. Both Churchill and Kaysinger have plans to continue honing their carving skills even after adzing is complete by apprenticing in February with master carver Steve Brown. He'll be in town carving the three-dimensional bear screen for the house.
We learned specifically for this, but we've both wanted to carve wood forever, and, you know, we just got to, you know, follow the path. We're going down the right path.
Churchill and Kaysinger say the next step is to clean up the traditional lanterns and other artifacts found in the house. Both say they're proud to be taking part in the project and are looking forward to the rededication ceremony, which is set for May of next year. In Wrangell, I'm Ariel Van Cleve.
A new grant program aims to support efforts to prevent teen suicides in Alaska. The program is a partnership between the Alaska Community Foundation and the Alaska's Children's Trust. According to a news release, the foundation is seeking applications for projects that will enhance community-based efforts to prevent teen suicide. Grants will fund activities that give Alaskans the tools they need to respond to at-risk teens and encourage Alaskans to work together on the issues and to take responsibility for preventing teen suicide. The release says activities should focus on promoting physical, mental, and spiritual wellness to prevent suicide. Grants may be awarded in amounts varying between $2,000 and $5,000. Applicants may include nonprofits, tribes, schools, churches, or local government agencies. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is receiving three federal grants totaling about $4.5 million. Institute officials say about $2 million will be awarded over 2 years to help build an educational facility in downtown Juneau for the study and sharing of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. The facility will be named the Walter Sobolev Center after Tlingit leader Dr. Walter Sobolev, who died last year. Another grant for $1.2 million will be distributed over 3 years. Institute officials say the money will fund cultural orientation programs for teachers in the University of Alaska Southeast and the Juneau School District. The third grant is for $1.37 million and will be distributed over 3 years. Some of it will go towards culture-based math summer camps for Southeast Alaska middle students. And the mayor of Anchorage has vetoed this week's repeal of a law that makes it illegal to sit or lie down on downtown sidewalks. Mayor Dan Sullivan says in a statement that the ordinance is a very narrowly tailored law aimed at conduct, not speech. Sullivan says a similar law passed in Seattle was upheld by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The Assembly voted 7-4 Tuesday to repeal the law. 8 Assembly votes are needed to overturn a veto. The law, approved in November, bans sitting or lying down on downtown sidewalks during certain times. There are exceptions for medical emergencies, waiting for a bus, or watching a parade. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Right now in downtown Sitka, it is 48 degrees, and today it's expected showers and isolated thunderstorms with highs around 52. Tonight, more showers and isolated thunderstorms, lows around 48, south wind 5 to 15 miles per hour.